Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schinkel, the President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And remember that our goal on the podcast is always to do a few things. One is we want to help you in your career journey and your leadership journey get better, get things done with a little less stress and aggravation, get some achievement on those projects, and otherwise, just build yourself up to achieve your full potential. And this episode is brought to you by the Leader Behavior Builder. And the Leader Behavior Builder is a feature of many of our training programs in which people set a commitment to put into action one piece of learning from that session. And then what our system does is checks in with them, measures their progress, and then produces a growth report at the end so everyone can see how much progress has been made with the learning that they had. So if that interests you, of course, you can reach out to us at uniquedevelopment.com. I'm excited about our guest today, Usni Semsadini, and he is the CEO of London Hydro. And London Hydro has been a long-term client of ours, but in dealing with Usni, I've only really been doing that recently because he came back. This is his second stint at London Hydro, and he's now back as the CEO, and we had a great relationship with the previous CEO. And I got the pleasure of doing a session in with which Usni was there, and we talked about accountability and empowerment. And so I thought it would be great to bring him on the podcast. Now, to do him justice, I want to read the introduction that I have. Usni Semsadini is a leader in the energy sector and the current CEO of London Hydro. With over 20 years of experience across various industries, including electricity distribution, telecommunications, manufacturing, and healthcare. Usni is an alumnus of Western University in London, Ontario, Canada, where he earned both his undergraduate and master's degrees in electrical engineering. He also holds an MBA from Wilfrid Laurier University. Before his time at London Hydro, he served as the CEO of both NT Power and Festival Hydro. Usni's expertise and commitment to the industry are further highlighted by the numerous boards he sits on: the Electricity Distribution Association, or EDA, the Electrical Safety Authority, and Ontario One Call, to name a few. He is widely recognized as a results-oriented community builder who is deeply people-focused, and certainly I've witnessed that. I'm thrilled to have him on the show today. Welcome to the podcast, Usni.
Greg, thanks for having me.
Maybe it would just help people because, again, our listener base is a bit broad, not only Canada, the U.S., but even outside of that. I'm just wondering if you tell people a little bit about London Hydro's business. Like, what is the scope of the operations?
Sure. Yeah, we're what we call locally a local distribution company, so an LDC. And really what our purpose is as an organization is to get electricity from the transmission system to people's homes. So we are the sort of face of the utility within Ontario for our customers. We're the ones who bill those customers, do the last mile connections, and service the grid internal to the City of London.
Right. I had the pleasure of doing a small assignment for the control center, which if people could picture it, it's like mission control, and there's boards showing the incoming power that's coming from the various substations and grids into the city, and then all the outgoing transformers or transformers within the city grid that goes to people's homes and things. And so if people are trying to picture what does the distributor or utility do, is probably the same in every neighborhood. You'll see people in trucks, you know, either stringing wires for overhead lines or doing underground work, or sometimes within cities, there's electrical components buried under the streets that you never see. So really, London Hydro services all the customers. Just roughly, how many connections does London Hydro manage?
Yeah, we have 167,000 customers in the City of London. And as you'd mentioned, you know, we really are the ones that you will see around in the city. So, I mean, people always call them telephone poles. Most of them are hydroelectric poles here in Ontario. So usually you see a pole or you see, a green box on people's lawns. Those are the transformers into the properties, and that's the equipment we service locally.
Yeah, I never really thought of poles until we started working for a company that does pole inspections for utilities. And then I always look for their little tag that's nailed to the pole, which is when it was last inspected. So these are all the things. It reminds me of, I think it was Sesame Street. These are the people in your neighborhood, right? So these are the folks that are doing work that you never think of. Tell us a little bit about your journey. I mean, you've had a lot of progress. I think anyone who is seeing you on video would say that you're still fairly young. What was the journey from studying electrical engineering to becoming the CEO of utility, including now London Hydro. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. First, let me thank you about the young comment. I'm going to send this to my kids who every day tell me I am not young, so I appreciate that. Yeah, it was an interesting journey for me. I studied electrical engineering, as you mentioned, at a local university or Western University here in London. Finished my degree in a specialty in power systems. So I was always sort of interested in, you know, the electrical system, generation, sort of distribution, transmission. So that was always something that, you know, resonated with me a little bit. So when I finished school, my first job out of university was actually for a local distribution company. I worked in the city of Kitchener for about a year there as a, you know, distribution engineer, learning the ropes, understanding, you know, the work of a local distribution company, transmission station, its distribution systems, just really learning still. After about a year, I had an opportunity to move back closer to home. So there was a manufacturing facility in St. Thomas I'd worked at as a student. And I had the opportunity to become the plant engineer. So, you know, being 10 to 12 months out of school, it was an opportunity to really be the, I guess, top electrical guy within the manufacturing facility. And, you know, as I look at career progression, some things feel lucky, some things are timing, some things, you know, they seem to fall into place. But that really gave me my first chance at management, right? So yeah. The job, although technical, and trying to keep, you know, lines up and presses moving, there was also a real human element to it as well. So, you know,
well,
overseeing.
I think you really get a handle on accountability when you're the engineer in a manufacturing facility, because there's that, like you said, the pressure to keep the equipment running and keep the plant making money. So very good experience for you. Then what was the reason to transition, say, out of that kind of situation back into the utility space?
So at the time when I was doing working in manufacturing, I decided that I was going to take a master's degree as well. So I did a master's degree at, because I was back in the London area, back at Western, within power systems. And so it was just, again, something that seemed to really resonate with me. So after working in the manufacturing industry for about 3 years, there was an opportunity that opened up at London Hydro initially after I had just completed my master's. And so, you know, I applied for that, went through that interview process, and luckily was selected to get back in the distribution world.
Right. And then an opportunity just opened up where you could get some progression by leaving London Hydro, which I think is always, this is a great lesson for anyone in their career path, is A, never burn any bridges, because you never know when you'll be back. And also... Yep. To realize that sometimes as part of your progression, you may have to leave. I'm not encouraging anyone to leave, but it's like sometimes that's where the opportunity arises. And I had forgotten until you mentioned it again, that one of the neat things is that you're back into your hometown area, really serving the community in the role that you have now.
Yeah, I mean, that was important for me, right? Being, you know, being where you're from and helping drive things like economic development, you know, doing important work that utilities do to keep people's lives on track every day. It's really nice when you can do that in your home community. So, you know, eventually I did leave London Hydro for that opportunity, as you've mentioned. I did get some good chances over the 4 years within London Hydro to move around and move up. When I was at London Hydro, I started as a distribution engineer in the engineering design department. Did that for about a year, then jumped into system planning. So I got to see some other sort of technical functions within the utility. After that, I was moved into special projects where I did a ring bus system for the downtown, which was a really new thing. There was not a lot of utilities that had experience with the downtown network, and not one when we were sort of replacing the old paper insulated lead conductor with new technology to be able mm-hmm. to take lead out of the system. So I did that for another year, and then after that, I got to be the Senior Director of Customer Service and Strategic Planning, and then I was the Director of Metering and Business Planning. So my career, even in London Hydro over those 4 years, was really one where I got to move around and experience things. Yeah. So you know, for people who are looking for that career opportunity, I'd always say, you know, just say yes, right? Like, I think sometimes it's scary to get thrown into new positions. Sometimes, you know, you're unsure of yourself as you move into those roles, but, you know, you got to believe in yourself, and you got to take that risk. So after I was here for about 4 years in London Hydro and settling in into the director's role, an opportunity came up to me for me to leave, go to Festival Hydro as a VP of engineering and operations. My goal coming out of university was always to run a company. And, you know, I think the other thing that people need to think about when they're charting their career is it doesn't happen by accident. You need to plan where it is you want to be and what the steps are that you think you need to take to get there. Some of them might be educational, some might be job experience, some might be personal development and growth. And, you know, I always had that. So when I left university, in my mind, my goal was by 30, I wanted to be a manager. By 35, I wanted to be a VP. And by 40, I wanted to be a CEO and run companies. I always knew that's what I wanted to do. That's my true. Plan accelerated from that a little bit, but yeah, I was having that opportunity.
That itself is impressive. I think having the goal and also, though, being mindful that the journey to the goal, you know, the opportunities will arise. So it helps to know where you're trying to get to and then realize as those opportunities come up how they are helping you on that journey or that path. And, of course, things can change and evolve as well. All right, so you're at Festival Hydro, and since people probably have heard of the Stratford Festival, which is big, Stratford, Ontario is home of the Stratford Festival, very big on putting on Shakespearean plays, but also other plays, still draws a lot of tourists, a beautiful, beautiful town. What happened to encourage you to move from Stratford?
So I had a lot of fun when I was in Stratford. I got to do a couple of really interesting things. So, you know, I started there as a VP early on. I think within the first 6 months that I was there, I was essentially running their ISP business. So that was, again, new for me, being thrown into a new position, sort of trying something that I hadn't done before. And within 3 years, I was selected as the CEO for Festival Hydro. And that was a job I kept for about 6 years until I moved to Newmarket. You know, sometimes you get comfortable. And I think for me, there was still more growth I knew I needed to have to do. And utilities are in much different positions and I don't know, they focus on different things depending on where they are in their own life cycle as an organization. And I just thought, you know, I had really gained a lot out of Festival and probably all that I was sort of going to get out of it with the 9-10 years that I'd been in that organization, six as the CEO, three additional as an executive. So this opportunity came up, you know, it was a utility that just had gone through a purchase. So there was a lot of merger activity sort of left to do. It was sort of the post-merger work. How do you combine systems? How do you create, you know, a uniform corporate culture? There was just different things that could really help me grow as a leader. So I thought it was an interesting opportunity, one I decided to take.
Yeah. So I'm curious, and then we know that you then moved from Newmarket to London, yes? Was that the next thing? So
correct, yep.
So let me ask you, early in your career, you obviously had the ambition, if you had those kind of goals, even coming out of school. What I'm curious of is, at first, it depends. You're either overconfident compared to your capabilities, because yep. They haven't been demonstrated yet, or for a lot of people, they're a little underconfident until there's usually this moment. It's really a series of moments, but there's usually this moment when the switch turns from, gee, I hope nobody discovers that I'm really just learning here, to, hey, I think I'm actually onto something. Can you think of an earlier project success or some milestone, or whether you just self-determined it or somebody else recognized you and acknowledged, where you started to go, oh, I am, my goals are not misaligned with my capabilities?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think every opportunity you get where somebody recognizes, you know, what you've brought to either the company or to your colleagues and gives you that chance for the next thing like that. You know, when I got to, for example, be involved in the ring bus system at London, or when I was given the opportunity to run the ISP company at Festival Hydro, like, as you said, I don't think it was one moment, but it was a series of examples where people looked to me for leadership. And, you know, so it happened in a couple of times and it sort of continued to happen. So it became a pattern in my work life. And I think you then get, you know, as you said, some of the maybe self-support that you now are starting to believe in yourself and your abilities to sort of do these things, right? And I know you talk about this stuff, and people always talk about imposter syndrome and all these sorts of things that they think that they're not ready. The truth is, when you get thrown into the deep end, no one's ever ready. And the question right. is, like, how do you now? What do you do? Right. Yeah. So you get there day one. You got to figure out what's going well, what's not, the changes that you're going to be looking to make, and most importantly, how do you bring people with you?
Yeah.
I think in leadership, being a technical expert is different than being a people leader. And there was a saying that I'd always heard sort of growing up, and I look back at it now and I hate the saying, which is, I love management, if it wasn't for all the people stuff. And the people stuff is what it's all about, right? And I like to refer to myself now as a cheerleader in chief, and my job is really about setting strategy, but then, getting people excited about going on the journey with me, because it's through those individuals that your vision gets realized. It's not me doing the work, right? It's people within our organization that are putting in the effort to ensure that we realize the vision that we have as a company.
So I'm curious, I want to ask a follow-up to that, because, you come up and you have your master's in electrical engineering and you are using your technical chops on these projects. And when did you realize that you had to stop meddling in the things that other people were really supposed to be responsible for, and be okay with that you weren't really being asked for your technical expertise anymore?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you that it ever goes away. I mean, there's an element where, on a daily basis, I have to ask myself the question. I look at the meetings that I have scheduled for the day. I look at where I'm spending my time. And I say, is this value for the organization? Because I think it is easy for people to jump back into their comfort zones, to look at the technical solutions. I think you refer to it in your classes as being, like the Superman, right? Like,
yeah, the hero.
We got a goal. Yeah, the hero, right? So we got the goal out. I can do a check mark. I did something today that had value. And I think where the challenge becomes in leadership, especially executive leadership, is the impacts you're making are really many years down the road. Like, the vision I'm painting is about a London Hydro that will be here 5, 7, 8, 10 years down the line, and not sort of that instant gratification that happens today or tomorrow or a week from now. So in my mind, I have this process that I think about often, which is, as a CEO, they shouldn't miss me if I'm gone for 6 months to a year. As a VP, you shouldn't be missed for 6 months. As a manager, you shouldn't be missed for a month. As a frontline supervisor, you shouldn't be missed for a week. And as a frontline employee, you should be missed tomorrow. Like, the work that they're doing is very much focused in the now. And I think as you get into leadership, it's about the future. That was something else I really liked from your class, which I took with me, which is, at a certain level in the organization, you work on the business. And at a certain level in the executive levels, you're working on growing the business.
Right.
So you really need to ask yourself where you're spending the time. So I wish I can tell you that I had a day where that just clicked in, but it is something that I think about often. I think all of us struggle with this a little bit, but it really is just putting your mindset to the future and being sort of at that right, time frame that you're thinking about the decisions that you make every day.
Right. And that's not to discount folks who decide to stay in the technical path and just grow their technical capabilities and keep deploying that for because they love it. I think, in fact, if anything, there can be mismatches sometimes. I mean, we're often training leaders who are relatively new to saying yes to a leadership role. And, organizations have to watch it, because often to either earn more money or to progress, you really have to take on people management, and really creating a path for technical specialty and expertise is important, because sometimes people are, they don't like the management. You very much embrace the fact that your job has a lot of people components. In fact, it's primarily steering people or helping people discover the path to success. And I think that's a frustration. So maybe that's why some technical people maybe meddle more than they should. I will say that the technical expertise provides a tremendous foundation, so that when you're hearing people talking about the business, you understand what they're talking about. And it also... But it's the front, I use a bicycle analogy sometimes. The rear wheel is your technical expertise. It's the driving factor. But the front wheel is the people. So it's the steering part that takes the technical expertise and gets the most value from it in terms of your role. And I'm not sure how open you are to this, but I'm guessing it hasn't been a perfect journey. Even for someone like as accomplished as you, there's probably had to be at least a learning or two or 100 along the way. I'm just curious, What's something where it didn't go as well, but it basically resonated with you that you still got some learning value from it, even if it didn't go well at the time?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think as you look back, it's you know, I think with experience and you know that time when you're doing the role and you get more confident in it. You know, sometimes I look back to my early days, right? So you become a CEO. I was 33 at the time. You know, running an organization worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the shareholder. You know, they had given me the keys, and I think sometimes when you look back, you think, having all the experiences you have today, you just go, wow, you know, would I have dealt with these things differently? Like, I didn't even know what I didn't know at the time, right? So, you know, I think there's these elements of, as you'd mentioned, having the trust in yourself. But I think to me, that always goes back to that, those first principles in terms of how do you solve any problem? Like, you know, where are we trying to go as an organization? What are the things that are hurdles for us? What are the resourcing that we need to get there? So I think if you can make good decisions, good logical decisions, and how you move forward, there's some protection there in terms of, you know, making the best decision for the organization you can. I think the other really important thing that I live with every day is sort of hope for the best, plan for the worst. So I think if you are planning contingency, thinking about risk within your organization or the projects that you're working on, it helps to keep the project somewhat on the rails. Like, projects are never perfect, or you know, implementations are never perfect. But I think the more you can pay attention to it and plan, and as you get to every element of that plan, understand how you're deviating and how you may get back onto plan, it just makes the process a little bit better. So for me, I can't point to one specific thing. I think it's been a series of things where, especially as an executive, you know, people come to you with the hard problems, because if it was an easy problem, it would be solved by the time it got to you. And you just have to give that advice and expertise. And a lot of times people know what they need to do. They just want a little bit of that, you know, support.
A little bit of reassurance, I think.
Absolutely.
I think you'd probably agree. And I've noticed I've been, a lifelong resident of London. I was born in London and went away to school and to work for a while. But one of the things, London was very stable population-wise, and therefore the rate base, I'm sure, of London Hydro was pretty stable, relatively low growth, especially compared to cities near Toronto and other areas. Right. What I'm curious of is London has really undergone a fair amount of growth in terms of probably new connections from a London Hydro perspective. But I also noticed that people often think of utilities as being somewhat, I don't know, boring, or, you know, the job, of course, is not to be noticed and, you know, have no outages and, you know, minimize disruption to customers. But I've noticed that you're leading some new innovation as well. You know, specifically what's been announced is that you're investigating sort of non-regulated services that the utility might offer. But you also just seem to have more of a growth mindset. And I just wanted you to have an opportunity, like, what does that mean to take people who've been used to kind of one set of parameters of success, and you're actually enlarging what the future might look like?
Yeah, so thank you for noticing that. I think that's the vision and the direction we're taking the organization. You know, it's my fundamental belief that if we grow in the right ways within the city, invest in transformer stations, be able to attract businesses, be able to attract residents because of those new jobs, and, you know, essentially grow the economy of the City of London and also grow London Hydro in that same way, there's great alignment between what London is trying to do and what our, you know, our shareholder in London Hydro is trying, or in the City of London is trying to do as well. So having that alignment was really important to me. And I think, you know, I've had that experience at past utilities where there was almost 100% alignment between what the city wanted to have happen and where the utility saw its opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I think getting a strategy, first of all, that aligned us was important. And that was the first thing I worked on. It was our sort of Vision 2030, where London Hydro was going over that sort of next 5 to 7 years, and putting us on that track was, you know, a big part of what we were looking to do as an organization. So the challenge, though, when you have an organization that has assumptions and the way people have been trained to do things, and I always say it, utilities came, I would say, from, you know, if you go back 20 years, there wasn't a lot of growth. And it was almost, I don't know, a place of fear. If you lost a customer, how would you ever get that revenue back? And we've now changed because of electrification, decarbonization. We're sort of the front lines to enable that work to have to happen, that we've almost gone to what I call the field of dreams model, build it and they will come. So we need to have the infrastructure there ready. We need to be aligned with economic development, and we need to be pushing things forward. So how you get there? You communicate a lot, right? I think you talk through the organization about the change that's happening. I say we're going from being a low-cost operator to a value creator. It's a different mindset. You have to work with your executive, you got to work with your management team, you got to work with, you know, the frontline employees, and really have them understand where it is that you're trying to go. And you know, that communication happens over and over again. Like, I meet with all employees probably at least 3 times a year, where we're talking about not only our strategy, going over our purpose and our vision again, our values as an organization, but what's on the horizon, what are the things we're looking to do, and how it aligns with our vision of the future. And I think when people see it, they hear it, they feel it, you know, that change starts happening over time. Bigger you are, the bigger that change takes. So I think as you know, an organization with 300, 350 people, we can be a little more nimble. So that change may be quicker than an organization that had 10,000 people, for example.
Right.
So I think we use our size as our advantage. We have these communications, we reinforce the behavior we expect, and then, you know, the team gets bought in, they get excited, and we move in a direction which is, as a leader, is awesome to see.
Yeah, I mean, I having being in your organization a handful of times a year, doing various, you know, meetings and touch points and sessions, I will say that there is this energy that's building, huh? No play on words there, but the energy is building, and I think it's just because people are awakening to it. But I also want to highlight, and I may have said this in the workshop that you were in, is a leader's role is to relentlessly remove ambiguity. A leader's role is to relentlessly remove ambiguity. So a lot of people are confused, like, are we really going this? I kind of heard Usni say this, but I didn't quite understand it the first time, and so I think it just deserves reinforcement, because I think leaders think, hey, if I made that one talk at one town hall, sent that one email, everybody should just kind of be on board, and realize that it takes a while for people to come to understand it, believe in it, buy into it, and commit to it. So just in case you needed some encouragement, because I know it probably, you feel sometimes like, how many times do you need to say the same message? Or say the message in different ways. And I think the answer is you probably have to keep doing it until it finally lands and bears fruit. The other thing I just wanted to highlight is people often think that nobody likes change. And I think that's something that we actually have to recognize, that actually people like change. Otherwise, we'd all still be, you know, not using any electricity, which I guess does happen. But it's like, the reality is we actually like change. What we like is change that we see as beneficial, exciting, empowering. So anyway, congratulations. Keep up the good work, because delivering the message relentlessly is important so that people aren't confused as to whether we're really going in this direction or not.
You know, we sort of call this our drip campaign, or, you know, as we think about communications, you're right. Like, reinforcing an idea, you don't believe something because you've heard it once. You believe it because you've heard it 1,000 times, and now we're seeing the evidence of the things. You know, people's actions are meeting their words, right? As a company. So, you know, to me, you're 100% right. It's not wasted. We talk about, you know, these things again. The strat plan was completed. I don't just put it on a shelf. Every time I meet now with my teams, that comes out front and center. What's our purpose? What's our vision? What, you know, what's our accountabilities? What are the pillars that we're going to use to get there? You need to reinforce these ideas. And it's funny, for those who are looking to move up in their organizations, I mean, you know, one thing that I did a lot of when I was an engineer was I went out and met people in other areas of the business, right? So, you know, I might be going having lunch with somebody from purchasing. It might be sitting down with, you know, or having a coffee with people from customer service. Like, the more you can get out there and understand what it is the business does at sort of all the levels, and start creating relationships with people in those areas, you're building yourself a support network to help you get to that next step. And the other thing is, when people start thinking highly of you across the organization, when that decision is being made for who's next for that promotion, now you're getting people championing you from multi parts of the organization. And I think that's something people don't think about often, They sort of keep their head down, stay in their lane, do the things that they have to do. And it's important to do those things. But it is important to know others in your organization, to understand what's happening, to form connections. Like, it really, that's leadership. And it doesn't change as you go up in the organization. You've got to form those connections and maintain them.
Well, it also helps, actually, you've just done one of my questions, right? Which is like, what advice would you give to somebody? The idea of Gemba, which in lean continuous improvement, like a Gemba walker, is to go to the place where it's happening. And I think it's just so easy, especially as technology improves, for leaders to stay behind their desk, or even individual contributors, stay behind their desk and focus just on their work tasks. And it is what you're saying is it is important to build relationships, obviously still get your work tasks completed. But really, it's in one of our programs, which is called the Pit Crew Challenge. Your team would love it, by the way. But with the race car is our facilitator, Bob Parker. He says, actually, we think processes drive people, but people actually drive processes. And so having a relationship focus along with your technical focus, I think it's been actually your superpower and certainly something that others can model themselves after. I did have a question about silos. So you're running and you've obviously done this before in a smaller organization. London Hydro is a bit larger. When you have these silos or departments or functions, in your case, you have multiple VPs, multiple directors, each has an important role to play. How have you sort of viewed silos and, you know, still important to have focus, but not have it be where it's internally competitive? Do you have any thoughts on silos and how to keep them in check?
Yeah, you know, I think that's something everyone struggles with, which is, you know, how do you communicate what else is happening in the organization? How do you give people an opportunity to maybe understand what's happening and try for opportunities there as well? So, interesting enough, we've just launched something within our own organization called Leads and Ladders, giving people the opportunity and ensuring that we've got the right steps within the organization to create succession, that you can move from, you know, an apprentice lineman to a lineman position, to a supervisor, to a general foreman, to a superintendent, to a director, you know, that there's a path there for people. So when we looked at that to me is leads, how you move up through the organization. And then we try to create ladders. What are the parts in our company that we need to try to connect more and to provide a path for people to be able to connect those two things? So we're actually working at that now to try to bring walls down, to try to bring barriers down for people within the company. My goal, what I tell all my employees is, you know, my goal is to have this be the hardest place anyone ever has to leave, right? Yeah. People leave for all sorts of reasons. I'm a person who's left a number of organizations as part of my career journey. So I'm never upset with somebody when they do. I just want it to be a really hard choice. And the way you do that is give careers for a lifetime. You give people these opportunities to move up or around in the organization. The other thing that I try to do a lot of is ensuring, although I do have executives and, you know, people always believe in this and I do as well. I mean, there's a chain of command within an organization structure, but it's important for me to do the walkarounds, to touch parts of the organization at different levels, to ensure the messaging is getting across properly. Because it can be a game of telephone, right? You have a conversation with your VPs, they hear something, it's a separate conversation to the managers. Supervisors is a different conversation. By the time it gets down to the front level employees, the message is lost.
Yes.
So to me, I use that as a technique to be able to ensure I am staying connected to what's happening on the ground within the company. And again, it's like an audit process, right? It's not that I have to get around and meet with every employee every day, but there's touch points. You know, I might see certain departments. I know change is happening in this area. Let me go down. Let me see how they're doing. How are they receiving the change? Do they have the training that they need? Is there any feedback that they have? Did they get the messaging beforehand? So, you know, to me, that's really important as well. You're 100% right. You can't sit behind a camera. You can't sit behind your desk. You need to be out there and see what people are going through every day.
Awesome. Well, the other thing I've noticed, I mean, you embody this yourself, is I noticed that there has been a change, which is a great way to accelerate some of the other changes you're making, but seeing a lot of the new younger leaders rise up because of retirements. And of course, that's a risk for organizations, but it's also an opportunity to see the leadership start to turn over. I think it's great that you're sort of looking at succession, because I think succession planning has been around as a to-do item for a long time, but there's having a strategy of succession planning is really what you just articulated there. We've covered a lot of ground so far, so really, you know, Usni, I appreciate that you've taken the time to be with us. I just wondered if there's something else that you had wanted to share that I didn't get around to asking you, or something that you want to leave our listeners and viewers with.
You know, maybe the one last thing I'll sort of talk about, it you know, with the hierarchy systems that we have, or the hierarchical systems that we have as business, you know, I think there's always this thing of where people see these levels as, you know, a better achievement in their career. And if you're not moving up, then you haven't achieved this thing. And, you know, the one thing I'd leave people with is understand your strengths. Understand what actually makes you happy, and not trying to strive to a position that sounds
will
like
make
it
you
would
unhappy.
Be good. Yeah, right. And you know, I think you brought it up with technical expertise. There is nothing wrong with very technical people who remain in technical roles through their entire careers, right? Yeah. A lot of brilliant people in those jobs making meaningful impact to the business, and that's okay. And you know, that's the one thing I would leave people with. You know, it's not about searching for titles, and it's not, you know, about those types of activities. To me, it's about being happy. And the one thing that I found in my job, you hear people always be like, well, it's work. No one's happy when, you know, being at work. And I disagree with that. Like, I love getting up every day doing the job that I do, because I knew that job was for me. So I would say to those people that are going through their career, if you're not happy in what you're doing, look to make that change. You know, don't go chase titles. That's not going to make you happy. Understand the work that makes you happy, and ensure that you're sort of setting yourself up for that success.
Yeah, interesting point. So thanks for sharing that. One program that I went to as a business owner, and at one point our business was small enough that it was basically me trying to do everything, and now we have you know, a team of 9 employees and another 8 or 9 instructors. But I went through a program called Strategic Coach, and they have a concept called unique ability. And the way that they define unique ability are the things that you're both good at and you enjoy that actually give you energy. And you've probably heard this concept before. So let's say if that unique ability is the center of a circle, in the next ring out is your circle of competence. You're good at it, but it doesn't jazz you up a lot. You can execute, you can do it well. Other people watching you would say you're competent at it, but it doesn't really jazz you up. And then the outer ring is the one that my wife definitely sees me do, and it's the circle of incompetence. And that would be the circle of frustration, which is the things that you're not good at. And anyone watching you, not only are you miserable when you're doing it, but anyone watching you is also miserable watching you do it. So you want to avoid really the third ring, and you either want to, well, ideally you want to focus on your unique ability. Remember though that your unique ability in most of our cases is something that actually was with you even as a young person, as a child, and it's just manifested in different ways. And if I asked you, Usni, how long does it take to figure out who you are as a human being, what would your answer be?
So I think it's actually a longer time than you would expect.
Exactly.
The thing that I go back to, which is the funniest thing that I remember from being a student in English class, I don't know if you got this or not, but Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? And this whole thing about, you know, shelter and food, and you get to the top, which is then self-actualization.
Yeah.
I think we're really good in identifying, you know, where others could improve, or where others are from a personality set, and are very hard to look inwardly at ourselves. We all think you know, we're perfect, right? As individuals. So it becomes very difficult.
Well, actually, I'm not even sure that people feel that way, but I do agree. First of all, the answer I was looking for is, it takes almost forever to know who you are as a human being. You do get glimpses of it. I was also going to ask this question is, you know, when you look at it, both an individual and also a leadership in their, or leader in their capabilities, you'd probably agree that even though you have some things that certainly helped you when you were in your 20s, you're probably, as you looked at 5-year increments, you probably have evolved your leadership from your very first leadership role to the one you have now. And my guess is you probably still have one more evolution at least to go, like as far as sort of growing in your capabilities. I don't know whether you'd agree that you go through like a 1.0 version of yourself, and then you kind of have these triggers.
Well, you know, I would agree with that. I think about my earlier career, and I was probably more direct, you know, or say some things today that I maybe wouldn't say. And I think that comes with experience and understanding people and how, you know, your words can impact them in terms of their thoughts. So there is an evolution there, right? I think as we grow and experience starts shaping us a little bit more, as you see scenarios play out for the second or third or fourth time, and now you know, hey, if I do this thing, it's going to go off the rails three steps down. You can start making those adjustments earlier, and you can look to your experience. So the other sort of thing I would leave with people is trust your gut, right? Like in a lot of ways, like intuition is telling you something for a reason. A lot of that, I believe, is based on experience. So, don't dismiss it. There's a reason that it's in your mind. I used to use windshield time. So if I was driving to work, it was 40 minutes or 45 minutes. I would find my subconscious would bring thoughts out, and I'd say, why am I thinking about this thing? Why did it not sit well with me? And then I could sort of play through it and understand it, maybe get to the crux of what bothered me about it, and now what we need to do about it. So listen to yourself, right? You've got good advice there, good experience, and don't be afraid to listen to your inner voice for sure.
Right, because that gut feel that you get is actually your body processing all the things that you've known and experienced in relation to the current thing. It doesn't mean, though, that you don't look at data to validate it or not, but at least
Absolutely.
trust the fact that those spidey senses are telling you something, right? So anyway, Usni, I don't want to keep you any longer, but I wanted to say thank you, first of all, taking time out of, I know you have a very busy schedule as a CEO of a utility. So thank you for that. Thank you for breathing some new and positive life into London Hydro. I mean, I had the pleasure of working with the previous CEO, Vinay, who did a great job. I think you're taking it, and I always believe that leadership is a stewardship thing. You have the baton for a while. Your job is to hand the baton off to the next person, who again hopefully builds on what you have and makes it even better. So thank you for being our guest today on the podcast.
Greg, thanks for having me, and it was a great chat with you.
Yeah, and if you need to reach out, of course, London Hydro, you can Google them. They are the local utility in London, Ontario, Canada. Usni can be found on LinkedIn, and you can see that in the show notes. For now, I just wanted to encourage you as a viewer, if there's something that you think we can help your organization with, whether it's at the frontline level or our new Plant Manager Excellence Program for more senior leaders. Something that we should just have a chat about. And you can do that on our website at uniquedevelopment.com. For now, I'll just encourage you to take the next step in your leadership journey and realize that your career is really a tapestry of experiences that have created who you are today and will help drive you into the future.